Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:51 p.m. and that is Pacific. No, it isn't. It is Central Time, and we are looking now at the potential for 10-year Treasury yields to reverse this uptrend that's been underway since August. I think it's important to highlight the commonalities that we're seeing across asset classes because it gives us a clue as to what the primary drivers are behind the markets at present. So, 10-year Treasury yields and bottomed in August. Obviously that means that the bond price peaked in August. Gold prices peaked in August. And the shares of companies like Facebook and Apple and Amazon, Netflix, Nvidia, they also peaked in August. So that's not a mistake. There's obviously something at work here. It all centers around perceptions of what exactly is going on in the bond markets. So something that contributed to the rise in yields was this perception that we're going to have a big recovery, that there will be a surge back in growth, and certainly with the additional rounds of liquidity that have been pumped into the market, then that obviously represents a significant source of additional money and the potential for asset price inflation, and also the clear determination by the Federal Reserve to run the economy hot and to try and do everything possible to reignite inflation. You get growth first, inflation afterwards, and then of course people were willing to give credence to that by buying stocks, but they bought the Russell, they bought the mid-cap sectors. They didn't buy the tech sector, and primarily the high growth and large cap growth sectors struggled because of this rise in yields. They mostly, though, went sideways compared to the downtrends that we saw in bond prices and gold. And a good reason for that is because companies are still making money. And they are still paying dividends and buying back their shares. And share buybacks are now exceeding the peaks from ahead of the crisis. So that has been a really quite profound change. And all of this talk about the clear requirement for resiliency, which was the buzzword in all of the earnings meetings back in August of last year, well, that has gone completely out the window. Everyone who was talking about reshoring and the need to run smaller operations with more inventory, that's also gone by the wayside, and we're increasingly getting back to business as normal. That also, of course, contributes to the robust expectation that growth will return. Well, then there was also the perception that if growth is going to return, that we might see interest rates rising faster, and that was an additional reason why people would sell bonds. And then, of course, there was the very clear phenomenon that the U.S. government was issuing more debt than the Federal Reserve was willing to buy. That threw the onus for supporting the market onto the private sector, and they demanded a higher yield. Well, the Fed minutes were released yesterday, and that confirmed that the Federal Reserve has absolutely no intention of raising interest rates. At the very minimum, they are of the belief, and they have plenty of evidence to back it up, that monetary policy has a lagged effect on the economy of anything from 6 to 9 months. So once they see inflation and growth back on track, well, then they're going to start a timetable, and they probably won't raise rates for at least another 9 months after that, and we're not there yet. And then, of course, there is the big unanswered question that has really not received a great deal of commentary from any of the reports or news stories that I've seen, and it is what's going to happen when the moratorium on evictions ends. And this is a question for a large number of countries. It's not simply that there has been a moratorium on evictions in the USA. There have been plenty of businesses that haven't been paying their leases in the UK, across Europe and elsewhere as well. And We're beginning to see rumblings of what that might look like. For example, in Texas today, I think it was the Texas Supreme Court decided that it was no longer necessary or even legal that landlords would have to enforce the CDC's requirements on ban on evictions. And it might be a test case for what we can see or expect from the rest of the world, because there is obviously this challenge that has yet to be addressed. It's a question that is obvious, and so far it has been delayed and kicked down the road, and the government in the USA decided when they installed the latest stimulus that it was going to be extended out to June, and who's to say it won't be extended further, because there is no politician wants to preside over and be blamed for another example of the foreclosure crisis that gripped the USA between 2012 and 14. So they're not going to raise rates in a hurry. They would much prefer to have inflation because they really believe that they know how to deal with that. Of course, we might not like the tools that they would have to bring to bear in order to deal with it, but they do believe that they can deal with it. So there is the potential here that we're going to see bond yields starting to come back down, and that removes a headwind for the large cap growth sector. So Facebook broke higher yesterday. It held on to the advance in here today, but it's an emphatic breakout from what is effectively a 7-month range. Amazon has also firmed really quite impressively from the region of the trend mean and the psychological 3,000 level, and it is now back above that 200-day moving average. I think any veteran subscriber will know about the dim view that I have of Netflix, but it is holding the region of the trend mean and firmed additionally in here today. Apple is another company that has been testing the region of the trend mean, and it has now firmed again. So we can certainly certainly think about these performances, and it is very much tied to the performance that we're seeing in the bond markets. And then when we look at gold, it was up another $17 today. It has now put in a higher high. We have not seen a higher high in gold since at least January. So this is, I think, further evidence that we are getting the anticipated bounce from the $1,700 area. Now we know that $1,900 was a temporary area of support, and we had a more than $100 rally. It was exactly the same when the price got down to $1,800, and we had more than a $100 rally. So we've got right down to the $1,700 area. It's quite likely we're going to get more than a $100 rally. On this occasion, the trend mean is coinciding with the $1,860 area. $1,860 was an area of resistance back in January and February. It was also an area of support back in October and November, or sorry, September and October. So it's an area which has got some at least psychological impact for the gold market. If it can push back above that level, well, then we will be looking at the end of this medium-term correction in gold. What I think is particularly relevant is that the silver price continues to firm from the region of the trend mean, and it has held up in a much more robust fashion than gold has. And when we look at this on a weekly basis, well, it looks like a first step above the base. There is really nothing that's occurred to really question that this is anything other than a first step above the base. And by the time this bull market is over, it will likely be well in excess of the peaks that we saw back in 2011. Well, that also would imply that we are moving into more of an inflationary bias. We're definitely seeing more discussion about tax policy, and governments are grappling with this dilemma. They are extremely reluctant to stoke the populist masses. We've seen populist movements erupt on both the right wing and the left wing at the peripheries of both those movements. And it's a direct response to the, I think, the policies that were put in place after the global financial crisis, which gave precedence to the interests of investors and corporations over individuals, and the socialization of private sector debts, and the fact that there were no big prosecutions in the USA because of the banking crisis, that there were millions of people thrown out of their homes in Europe, that the private sector debts, which had been accrued by creditor nations in the debtor nations on the periphery, and then when those debts went bad, instead of allowing the banks to go bust, the private sector debts were pushed onto the populations of those countries, and they had to endure lower wages, lower social services, higher taxes, and that remains the case today. So that has contributed to the growth of populist movements. There is no way that governments are going to try and adopt the same kinds of policies that they deployed after the global financial crisis and the European sovereign wealth crisis. So they're going to go for something else. So the first thing that they're definitely going for is carbon taxes. So there is a determination to try and tax the polluters and the corporations that are polluting. But the one challenge with that is the most wealthy companies in the world aren't big polluters. That's certainly the case with those that are natives to the internet, like Facebook or Google, or indeed the companies like Apple. Instead, what they are now looking at, in addition to these carbon taxes that continue to trend higher, and the cost of carbon is certainly on a secular trend because it is government sponsored. So that is something that is very much baked in the cake. We can definitely think about the fact that Fortescue Metals is now trading like a hydrogen stock, and it is likely to benefit from lower interest rates overall, and the kinds of growth companies that benefit when there is abundant low interest rate debt to be had, well, they'll all benefit from this kind of environment. So what we also saw in here today was that the IPO ETF also started to steady in a more, I think, convincing fashion from the region of the trend mean. So growth is looking like we're going to see an additional pop on the upside in here. And this is also another example of how swiftly we're seeing rotations occur in this market. It is looking like that we don't see trends evolve in quite the same way that we have before, but that we're seeing choppy markets where there's a rotation about once every quarter. And we are now at the beginning of the second quarter, so it's quite likely that the second quarter could be the growth quarter before then we start to see inflationary pressures rising again in the third quarter. And that would represent a rotation backwards. It is also starting to increase the potential that we will have inflation overall, and negative real yields are the primary bull case for gold overall. Then, when we think about what that means for the dollar, if the US is going to refuse to raise interest rates, then that is not particularly beneficial for the dollar index. I continue to think that the Bloomberg Dollar Index is a better measure, for the simple reason that it does have more emerging market currencies in there, and euro has less of a strong weighting. We've certainly seen, though, that there is continued interest in the stock markets of reflation candidates. So Australia's ASX 200 has broken emphatically higher out of this short-term range. The FTSE 250 in the UK is also completing its range and pushing now through to new all-time highs. So now starting to complete, or just completely unwound, the big decline in early 2020 and beginning to fulfill some of the potential that it was showing right at the end of 2019. The challenge with the outlook for other countries is a lot of currency trading right now is very much being based upon the outlook for the success or otherwise that countries have with controlling the coronavirus. So the Bovespa index in Brazil, it has bounced from the region of the trend mean and it's consolidating in the region of its peaks, but the condition of the real is, I think, flattering this performance. But on a constant currency basis, it is bouncing. It's a major commodity exporter, and we're certainly seeing that there is plenty of demand for the kinds of products that Brazil exports. So they will get on top of this coronavirus or spike in the number of cases. That's absolutely inevitable. It's only really a question of how long it takes. And in the meantime, demand for exports will persist. So soybeans are now consolidating in the region of the 1500 area, 1500 cent area. And that is slowly unwinding the overbought condition relative to the trend mean. There is, of course, the risk with all of these commodities that having done so very well in such a short period of time that we may see an additional period of ranging, which would further allow the overextensions relative to the trend mean to be unwound. Nonetheless, it does look like there is a clear bullish environment for commodities overall. The Nifty index in India continues to hold the breakout to new highs. So far, it has held its sequence of higher reaction lows as well. There is still something of an overbought condition, but as long as India is going to be one of the countries that comes out of the coronavirus pandemic as a growth leader, then that is likely to represent the it's going to be a bull market environment for as far as the eye can see, although of course any big pullback will be a buying opportunity because it is a volatile market. So there is of course the additional point with India that it is being championed as the counterweight to China, and that's a geopolitical imperative, which really suggests that India isn't going to be allowed to have a big crisis. There will be ample support for India because of the need to counterbalance the influence of China, particularly in Asia. Now, when we look at Japan, the Nikkei index was a little bit weaker in here today. It's still pausing around the 30,000 level. It's gradually unwinding its overbought condition, but this continues to look like a bull market environment overall. As we look out to where potential issues will be in future, I think it remains quite clear that the bond markets are not worried about the prospect of defaults. So high yield spreads are still contracting, and they are not far off now the narrows that we saw back in 2014. So There is plenty of demand for high yield debt and really anything with a yield. And the fact that we can still pick up an additional 230 basis points over treasuries, even with the spike higher in treasuries, that also confirms the view among bond investors that the Federal Reserve isn't going to allow a big problem to arise in high yield debt. And then, of course, we have the fact that there was a maturity wall that people were worried about, that was going to start to become an issue in 2021 and 2022, and that has now pretty much evaporated. Any company that wanted to refinance debt used the opportunity of the pandemic to get the job done. So that means that we're not going to have a big maturity wall at any point in the next couple of years. The one place that does have a maturity wall in 2022 is Argentina. And considering the persistent devaluation of the currency and the inability of the government to get their act together, it's quite likely that they will default again. And that has the potential to be an issue, but not until 2022. So we're still in this benign environment. Obviously, people are worried about valuations, but valuations are always high coming out of a crisis because of the hit to earnings. And prices always recover before earnings because the market is a discounting mechanism. Then, of course, the question is, will the earnings potential rebound as hoped? And it's quite likely that that will be the case. So that, I think, is also one of the primary factors, that we are likely to have an additional leg higher in this bull market, that there is still potential for additional upside, because there is the clear potential that we're going to have low interest rates for longer than we need them, that it will help to inflate valuations. But that is exactly the kind of environment that we had in 2010 and 11. There was a lot of fear about the outlook for markets, and yet they continued to power higher. And it's potentially what we're also looking at right now, because when people worry about the potential for a big decline, and when there are lots of reports written about it, and people being very vocal about the risks, well, then that's generally representative of the wall of worry. It's usually when nobody is talking about the risks, when everybody is long, and when everyone has enjoyed a really impressive performance in their portfolios. Well, that's usually when it's time to be worried, because interest rates are already rising, and high yield spreads are rising, and we have an inverted yield curve. And we just don't have any of that right now. So it's quite likely that what we are seeing is the persistence of this reflation trade overall. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.